Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer, brought to you by Vion Corporation on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Every week, Federal News Radio interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Ask the CIO with your host, Jason Miller.
And our special guest today is Roger Baker, the Veterans Affairs Department's Assistant Secretary for Information and Technology and the Chief Information Officer. Roger, it's always a pleasure to have you join us.
Jason, great to be with you.
We talked about 9 or 10 months ago. There's a lot going on. You are one of the more busy CIOs, if you will. I wanted to catch up on some specifics. You've been now Assistant Secretary for Information and Technology and CIO for about 15 months. This is obviously not a new job for you as a CIO in the government, but running an agency as big as VA and everything that you've done in terms of trying to get VA is moving in a better direction. It's been a very busy 15 months. Give me some perspective of your job so far.
Well, the easy answer is I'm clear that I have the best IT job in the federal government. I've got budget. I've got authority. I've got a mission that everybody understands. We have good technology, and we've got, at VA, centralized IT under the CIO that really makes a lot of those things possible. You couple that with having a great boss or great set of bosses and the secretary and deputy secretary at VA. This is pretty much an ideal job. If I could change the commute, I'd tell you that it is an ideal job.
So no teleworking for you?
Well, you know, it's pretty tough to telework an assistant secretary job, but I do have, if you will, a virtual office. So when I get out of here after about 12 or 14 hours during the day, I can go home and continue to work. And I can't tell you that I really think that's a good thing, but it does seem to be effective.
Best IT job in government. I think you may be challenged by some of the other CIOs out there who think they have the best job as well. You came in, you made kind of a big splash trying to write VA's ship in terms of some of the project management, stuff like that. Talk about the status of those 45 projects you initially suspended. How has PMAS made VA a better managed IT organization?
So I'll give you the metric as of the end of July. We really had rolled PMAS onto all projects as of March 1st. So our metric from March 1st forward so far is just over 81% of our milestone dates are being met. We have, over the last year, implemented a tremendous culture change in the development part of VA's IT organization. We're now at the point where there is no project that doesn't have a deliverable date within the next 6 months that's an active project. We know what all of our projects are. We know where they are relative to their milestones. I've got a dashboard that we'll probably be displaying if I do testimony in front of Congress here in the next couple of months that tells us exactly where every one of our projects is on a daily basis, how many milestones we've got coming up during the month, and where we are on a rolling basis relative to that percentage. What's been very gratifying has been that change, has been the success that we're having based on that. And frankly, as you look at what OMB and Vivek are doing at this point, it's clear we've got a lot in common with where they view the government as needing to go. And I like to think that we've been able to provide them with a very, very good test case for the argument that, yes, you can change large programs to deliver on 6 month deliverables and reduce the risk substantially while still meeting the program needs. So we've had great success down that IT project side.
And you mentioned two things that stand out. Number one, let me go with the easy one. You had a goal of 80% of all software dates. You said you're meeting just over 81%. I mean, that's pretty impressive in a number of ways because software dates are tough to meet. Talk about how you're able to ensure that 80% was met.
There are two things behind it, frankly. The first one is we're not doing the projects where we weren't going to be successful. So we have winnowed down the projects we're doing to the ones where we know we can succeed. And the second thing that we've done is taken all of those milestones and turned them into bite-size chunks. So it's much easier to plan out and successfully meet the delivery of a six-month milestone than it is a 2 or 3 year milestone. And the combination of those two things, making certain that the only programs we're allowing to go forward are the quality ones, and that those programs are then focused on lots of small near-term dates rather than a big long-term date, those two in combination have really been the change that has driven that metric up. Our guesstimate, because frankly nobody was measuring these things a year ago, But our guesstimate is that a year ago, we were meeting about 33% of our milestone dates. At this point, we've got hard metrics that say that it's just north of 81%.
The other thing you mentioned, I want to touch base on that real quick, is the culture change. And that's so key. I mean, you hear that time and again. How do you think you, as the CIO and assistant secretary, changed the culture?
The main thing to recognize is that there's not one person, not one developer at the VA who comes in saying, well, I'd like to blow a development date today. You know, everybody wants to do a good job in what they're doing. And I think a lot of what we've done is, if you will, tapped into that and help folks understand that by changing the way we do things, we the organization do things, we're gonna be able to be more successful. And some of that has been, frankly, taking on some process changes that I think have been very helpful to the folks in the project. You know, one is shortening the dates. And that took a bit of getting folks to understand that it was going to be to their benefit to deliver on a nearer-term milestones rather than waiting and doing things from the waterfall perspective, you know, and longer-term ones. The second one is, in effect, doing joint accountability or multiple buy-ins. And I think what people came to understand is that when they brought in a good project plan and we said, yes, go ahead, at that point, from a management standpoint, we also became accountable for their success. And so we've implemented a process that we call the red flag process. And usually multiple times during a day, I will get an email that starts with, you know, the subject line is all caps, red flag. And what that is a project manager escalating to me and my team that they've got a problem that could cause them to miss their date. And what we've been able to convince people of is that we want to help them. You know, there are a lot of things that I, as the assistant secretary, can solve that a project manager may not be able to. But, you know, when you put all that together, what you end up with is an organization that is focused from top to bottom on projects meeting their dates. So at the same time you're saying, I'm going to help, I'm bought into this, you can also then say, but if you don't alert me and, you know, your project fails, now we've got a problem, and I'm going to hold you accountable for that. But if you alert me and we're not able to get things out of your way, you've done everything you can possibly do as a project manager. You've escalated, you've informed, you've been transparent from a project management standpoint. Our internal strike meetings, which are what we have when a project misses its milestones, these days tend to be pretty friendly affairs because what we're talking about is already known information about why the milestone was missed, and we're going back and doing a lessons learned and asking two questions. One is, how can we not do that again? And the second is, what's the impact on the project long term? And frequently what we find is there's not an impact on the project long term. We've addressed the issue, and we've got a project that is still in good shape that missed one milestone date. So a lot of these things have come together to really change the culture to one where top to bottom we're all bought into making every project successful, and we all take accountability for making every project successful.
And I want to real quick tag back to the very beginning when we sort of started talking about why you have such a great job. Are you able to do these things in many respects because you do have the budget, you do have the authority, you do have the centralized technology oversight where maybe other CIOs who maybe are listening to this and say, yeah, well, Roger's different because he has those things? Or is this just, you know, your basic, and I don't mean to simplify it so much, but, you know, you got to be, you know, simple, straightforward project management, you know, good best practices that if you take the time and put forth the effort to put it in place, everyone can be successful to at least to some degree.
Maybe the main difference between having the direct authority and having the indirect authority is being able to convince people that you can actually help them. You know, back when I was at Commerce, I frequently, I hope jokingly, referred to the fact that I'm from the government, I'm here to help. And when everybody understands that you have the direct authority and responsibility for the delivery, that it's not a theoretical thing, that when a project doesn't deliver, it's part of the CIO's track record, not part of the Bureau's track record. I think that makes a difference in people understanding what you're there for and being willing to escalate those things to you because also believe that you can really help from that standpoint. Now, I think there are cultural things that CIOs throughout government might be able to do that are much the same, but I think in the end, having that direct that direct control is a key difference, and I certainly freely say that to everybody. Having the authority, having the budget, having the direct control is a vast difference at VA from most other government agencies.
And I know that we could go into a whole different direction with this conversation about Clinger Cohen and the real meaning of what that is and whether that's really the spirit and the intent are being implemented across government, but we'll have to save that for another time. We're actually going to take a break. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Roger Baker, the Veterans Affairs Department's Assistant Secretary for Information and Technology and Chief Information Officer.
CIOs and IT directors, is your network-attached storage infrastructure out of control? Do you have dozens and dozens of NAS appliances that are difficult to administer? Ask the experts at Vion Corporation how Hitachi's high-performance NAS, powered by BlueArc, can consolidate your NAS infrastructure, reduce your number of NAS appliances, and improve your NAS performance. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com. CIOs and IT directors, are you paying for capacity services that you're not using? Take a good look at your capacity services contract, and next time, make sure you're not signing just another lease. Ask the experts. Vion Corporation, you can create a plan so that you only pay for what you use. When your job is on the line with data storage decisions, that's the way to go. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with integrity and quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Roger Baker, the Veterans Affairs Department's Assistant Secretary for Information and Technology and CIO. Now, Roger, before break, we spent a lot of time talking about those 45 projects and your goal of getting 80% of all software milestones met. You also looked at about 286 other projects across VA, and you were deciding which one should continue based on priorities, which one should end. You brought up, which was one of my favorite sayings, the Yoda rule. And I want to go back to those. What's the status of those 286? Are you still following the Yoda rule?
Well, so we're tracking about 100 active IT projects right now relative to that 286. I think the 286 probably included projects in planning and projects that are paused and a variety of other things. So realistically, we're probably around 180 relative to the 286 with 100 of those as active. We are absolutely, and I think maybe the toughest thing we do is follow the Yoda rule. And the Yoda rule, as you recall, is do or do not, there is no try. It comes down to what caused a lot of failures at VA in the past was telling a project manager, no, you can't have all the resources that you need to be successful, but go out and try and be successful anyway. And we have really enforced the discipline of we're going to make hard decisions at a management level about where those resources are going to go. And the projects that we say go on are going to have sufficient resources to be successful. And the ones that we don't have enough resources for, we're just not going to go on. And I think that has really added a lot to the success of our project. We're coming up to, frankly, in my view, a worry that I was looking forward to, which is the question of, are we now at the point where we're too successful? You know, if you're not taking some risks, if you're not failing occasionally, then you're not stretching yourself far enough. So one of the things in looking forward on PMAS we knew when we started was that we were going to get to the point where if we were successful, we would get to the point where our metrics showed we were too conservative with the projects that we started, that we needed to start with maybe skinnier resources and do more projects. I'm frankly looking forward to being at that point. I would say that point is at about somewhere around 90% success rate for the IT projects. We clearly aren't there yet. We're just over my 80%, and if we happen to have a bad month, we'll dip under that. So we have to be fairly careful with it. We've prioritized a lot of things. We've paused some things that we didn't think were going to be successful. We have stopped doing things where we didn't see real benefits for the veterans. You know, all in all, I think the way we would characterize it is we have right-sized the entire portfolio to do the things we know are the highest priority, that we have the resources to do, and that we can be successful at doing. And, that has been a substantial success area for us over the last year.
When you look back at some of those 100 projects or so that you ended up not going forward with, what were some of the toughest decisions? Were there any of them that you said, wow, this is good, but... You know, we just can't be successful. We don't have the resources right now, whether it's people or money.
Well, I think, you know, the primary example out there at this point would be the flight program. Two things drove the VA to stop the flight program. The first was the question that we were raising on the IT side, which was, do we have the resources to do this and all the other things that we want to do down this path? And the second was, on the financial side, the question of, do we really need this program? Is it high enough priority that we want to do it above the other things we want to do on the financial side? And Todd Grahams, who's the CFO, and I pretty much got together and made the decision that there were higher priority things and more impactful things for veterans than to continue down the path of the flight program. And I think on a smaller scale, we've made those kind of decisions many, many times inside the VA over the last year with lots of smaller projects where the folks on the health side would get together with the folks on the IT side and say, you know, I'd like to have projects X, Y, and Z, but X is much more important than Y and Z, so please just put all your resources on the one that's highest priority. Probably the biggest culture change inside of VA has been the IT organization working extremely cooperatively with its customers in the health administration, the benefits administration, and jointly to make these programs a success. Because successful programs require customer cooperation, they require the IT organization cooperation, they require vendor cooperation. There's a lot of work that goes into that, but what we've got inside the VA now is an entire enterprise that has learned how to get focused on the success of our programs. From the deputy secretary on down, everybody is bought into, we're going to have successful programs. And that's been a tremendous culture change for the entire organization.
You're very excited. You have a lot of optimism. I mean, it sounds like if I'd walk away from this right now and say, well, you know, Roger Baker's got it. He's figured out the key to the city. But also, we know that OMB recently released their high priority list, and you had two programs on that list, which means there's two programs that are in, I guess, some serious trouble based on OMB's criteria. Talk a little about how what you're doing with those two programs and which two programs they are, and how does your experience with that, with the initial 45 projects that you paused and fixed, are going to play into turning those two around?
So I want to make certain that I verbalize something that I've been talking about with OMB. It's a high-risk list, and risk has both an upside and a downside. So I would call, from a VA perspective, I would call these high-impact programs. We, for both the paperless initiative, although we call it VBMS inside of VA these days, the Veterans Benefits Management System, and for the pharmacy reengineering program, we renovated those programs last year. On the paperless side, we completely changed direction from having a large-scale systems integrator responsible for that program to having our own technologists and driving down a very PMAS-compliant approach with it. On the pharmacy reengineering side, that was one of the original 45 projects that was paused, and it required substantial project schedule changes, to get it to the point where it got focused on delivering in six-month increments rather than the old-style waterfall. Both of those programs have been fully renovated at this point. When we sit down with OMB to talk about these, you know, about the VA projects on the high-risk list, we're going to be talking about how we have changed them to meet six-month increments and how we're monitoring them to making those milestones that we've set out. So Vivek and I had a very, very good conversation about, yes, VA needs to participate. We have things that realistically are high-risk, because they're high impact and they're very, very important to the Secretary's initiatives and the President's initiatives. But at the same time, we have been down this path with these programs. Their long-term, as you look at it from the OMB perspective, has a troubled past. Their future looks very, very bright. And again, they're both very impactful programs as far as the mission of VA is concerned. I'm looking forward to the conversation. I know that Vivek knows exactly what's coming, which is I'm going to tell him how good these programs are doing now, after all the work we did in the last year to get them to that point.
Very good. I'm going to take another break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about some of your other priorities, other things you've been working on. You are listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Roger Baker, the Veterans Affairs Department's Assistant Secretary for Information and Technology and the Chief Information Officer.
CIOs and IT directors, are you paying for capacity services that you're not using? Take a good look at your capacity services contract, and next time, make sure you're not signing just another lease. Ask the experts. Vion Corporation. You can create a plan so that you only pay for what you use. When your job is on the line with data storage decisions, that's the way to go. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with integrity and quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com. CIOs and IT directors, is your network-attached storage infrastructure out of control? Do you have dozens and dozens of NAS appliances that are difficult to administer? Ask the experts at Vion Corporation how Hitachi's high-performance NAS, powered by BlueArc, can consolidate your NAS infrastructure, reduce your number of NAS appliances, and improve your NAS performance. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Roger Baker, the Veterans Affairs Department's Assistant Secretary for Information and Technology and CIO. Now, Roger, before break, we talked a lot about your projects, some of the projects around, for instance, on the high priority list from OMB, some of the projects that you've looked through PMAS. There's another project of the VISTA project, and you actually took a different course on this one. You reached out to industry and said, hey, we need some help. How can we better implement this? Maybe open source, you know. So give us the status of that effort. What's the status of VISTA modernization? And maybe even how does that fit in more broadly to some of the health technology areas that are VA's priorities over the next year or so?
We're moving forward down a path to make decisions relative to the future of VISTA and future directions, technically, of the VISTA product here by the end of the year. And so, you know, we kind of started the discussion with the IAC study and the VISTA open source piece in early September. We have a meeting set up with a bunch of folks from VA to talk about the current state and what we think the future relative to technology and the things we're going to have to deal with are. We'll be doing some RFIs, some additional RFIs for industry to help us feed into that process. And hopefully by the end of the year have laid out this is where we're going, whether it includes open source, how it includes private sector folk. You know, there are a lot of great innovations going on in electronic health records now in the private sector. And we have to be able to figure out how to really embrace those. VA has for 30 years led in electronic health record. And in order to keep that leadership, we have to recognize the realities in the market, which is we're not the only folks anymore. There are a lot of investment going into good technologies on the medical side. And we need to make certain we can really embrace those new technologies, whether they're built by other government organizations, by private sector organizations, by nonprofits. We need to make certain that we can provide our hospitals with the best electronic health record system possible and allow them to run that, whether it's built by us or built by somebody else, as far as I'm concerned.
So when we talk about RFIs around VISTA, let me step back there for a second. Can you give us a sense of what types of information you're going to look for from industry?
Well, it's important that we get a full hearing of all the issues around VISTA, moving VISTA forward. And for government to really get broad feedback from industry, it's a little bit of a stylized approach. And we're choosing, utilizing the RFI piece, we may have an industry day where we sit down and talk folks through what we're seeing so far and get their input on it. We want to make certain that anybody who wants to provide us input on where we should go with VISTA has that opportunity. Because we're going to make decisions that could have impact both on the government side and the private sector side, and we want to make certain that no one is left out of that discussion.
And interestingly, when you reached out to IAC to look at VISTA, it was a different approach than normally we see in government. Talk about that approach just briefly. How does it work? You know, were you happy with the results? Was it something maybe you would do again for other issues?
I was very, very happy with the results, and I would publicly thank the IAC team, in particular Ed Marr, for all the work they put into this. Lots of their Saturdays went into this study. It really helped discussion and moved the discussion along, especially on the side of whether or not open source was an approach from a VISTA perspective, and clearly getting industry input in where we might take things from a governmental standpoint is something that I would do again. You have to pick the right things. You don't want to waste people's time. You know, I want to make it real clear to the folks that spent a lot of hours on that their work has been taken very seriously. I'm sure we won't follow all the recommendations, but they certainly have factored into all the discussions that we're having relative to the future of Vista.
And again, I think it's a nice model because a lot of times agencies go through this RFI project process, nothing ever comes back from it. Eventually an RFP comes out and industry sits there and goes, what was the point of the RFI when you didn't even take into anything we did? Having this type of thing is a very similar approach, just it's more community-based, I guess.
Right.
One of the other interesting things, you can't talk about VA if we don't talk about cybersecurity, a major focus, major priority of yours. You guys recently hired Jerry Davis from NASA to focus on cybersecurity. Where does Jerry Davis sit in your organization? And give us an update of where you guys are going from a cybersecurity perspective.
Jerry recently joined us as the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Information Protection. We have at VA now two of the absolute best information protection folks in government, in Jerry and Jaron Doherty. Jaron's been doing an outstanding job for us for years as Jerry's deputy at this point. He's been acting for the last year in that role. We've made tremendous progress there. You know, my focus in the last year has been getting us to visibility to the desktop and eventually visibility to every device on our enterprise network. And for what is probably the largest consolidated IT enterprise in the country and in the world.
We interrupt this program to activate the emergency alert system for the Washington, D.C. metropolitan operational area because of a local weather emergency. The National Weather Service has issued a flash flood warning for the following areas: the District of Columbia, South Central Howard County, Montgomery County, Southern Anne Arundel County, Prince George's County, Calvert County, the City of Fredericksburg in Virginia, Spotsylvania County, Eastern Orange County in Central Virginia, and King George County in Central Virginia. Also, Stafford County, Eastern Culpeper County, the City of Manassas, Manassas Park, the City of Alexandria, the City of Fairfax, City of Falls Church, Arlington County, Eastern Fauquier County, Eastern Loudoun County, Prince William County, Fairfax County, Charles County in Southern Maryland, and St. Mary's County in Southern Maryland. This is a flash flood warning for the areas just mentioned. It's in effect until 4:30 today.
As of 10:30, 2 to 3 inches of rain has already fallen in the warning area and in areas along the western shore of the Chesapeake Bay. Rainfall of 4 to 6 inches has fallen. Rain, heavy at times, will continue through the afternoon. Flooding, especially in low-lying and flood-prone areas, is occurring. Precautionary preparedness actions. Do not drive your vehicle into areas where the water covers the roadway. The water depth may be too great to allow your car to cross safely. Move to higher ground. Do not cross barricades. A flash flood warning means that flooding is imminent or occurring. If you're in the warning area, move to higher ground immediately. Residents living along streams and creeks should take immediate precautions to protect life and property.
We now resume regular programming.
On the Secretary's initiatives flows from that. So those are going to remain the focuses probably for as long as I'm here, which is hopefully for quite a while.
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today was Roger Baker, the Veterans Affairs Department's Assistant Secretary for Information and Technology and Chief Information Officer. Roger, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Jason. Enjoyed it.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer, brought to you by Vion Corporation on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Ask the CIO Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM WFED, your source for federal news now.